You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. In addition to looking at the ongoing presidential campaign, Ken talks to the author of a new book on the history of crying. They look at tears in American political history. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, since the Affordable Care Act was signed into law back in 2010, tens of millions of Americans have added health care coverage, some through reforms that allowed people to stay on their parents' insurance, and many uninsured people were able to purchase insurance through the public exchanges. The ACA, also popularly known as Obamacare, has faced a number of challenges, from a disastrous website rollout to challenges argued before the Supreme Court. The most recent issue facing the Affordable Care Act is news that several insurance companies, including insurance giants Aetna and United Health, are planning on pulling plans on public exchanges in 2017, in many states saying they're losing money on the exchanges. Joining us to talk about that news and the overall state of the Affordable Care Act is Tom Oliver. He's a professor of population health services at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's start off with a listen to President Obama talking about the Affordable Care Act. He's talking about the exchanges here back in 2010.
Once this reform is implemented, health insurance exchanges will be created, a competitive marketplace where uninsured people and small businesses will finally be able to purchase affordable quality insurance. They will be able to be part of a big pool and get the same good deal that members of Congress get. That's what's going to happen under this reform.
So, Tom, the exchanges were just part of this big, new, at the time, health care law. But looking at the exchanges, the health care marketplace, how successful has this been so far?
Well, it's a mixed record, in part because at first there was, as you pointed out, a very bumpy rollout. But actually, as time has gone on, more Americans have decided to enter and enroll in the health insurance exchanges than expected. There are, as you said, well over 10 million, 12, 13 million Americans now getting their coverage on their own through the exchanges with multiple options in general. The stumbles that we've seen in the news recently are due to the fact that some health insurance plans that have participated in the past now suggest that they will not participate. But we need to put that in perspective, I think.
What kind of perspective do you want to see that in?
Well, first of all, the plans are getting somewhat sicker than expected individuals enrolling. The thing for insurance to work, you need to get younger and healthier individuals to go along with older and sicker individuals. And to make money, you have to be able to understand what those risks will be. The risks are a little bit higher than were expected for many of the plans, in part because the rest of the insurance system has not unraveled as was expected. A lot of employers were expected to drop their coverage now that the exchanges were available and just send their workers to those exchanges. But fewer employers have dropped coverage than expected, and so some of the healthier individuals have stayed in those pools. Also, as you said, the young adults up to age 26 can stay on their parents' coverage. They tend to be very low cost and low risk and therefore are pretty profitable, but they have not entered the exchanges either. So the bad news for some of the health plans participating in the exchanges is actually due to the good news that the health system as a whole has been stabilized and is performing rather well.
I want to turn to a New York Times map earlier this month, I think it was, or last month, showing a decent chunk of the country, and I think this is something like 17% of people served in exchanges, are only going to have one or two options for health care providers. This is a part of Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin in particular. Most of the state has three or more options, but there's a decent portion of the country where if you want to be on this individual marketplace, you've got one choice or maybe two choices. Is this a problem that's going to go away?
It may or may not go away. I mean, the issue of having limited choice is something that is there because of the nature that there's not organized health plans in most rural areas in the United States. This is a problem not just for people who want to be on the exchanges, but for those under Medicare and other areas where there's options. So Wisconsin is actually amazing in that it has more health plans available in the exchanges than any other state except New York. In other words, more than in California, more in Texas, more than other states with much larger populations. And so part of this is that it's very difficult to create and organize health plans and health systems that then can compete and on a for-profit basis in rural America. So that is why Medicare, when it was being reformed a decade ago, the Republicans who proposed the reforms could not take away the public option and make people join private health plans because private health plans simply refused to operate in many of the rural areas.
Talking to Tom Oliver, professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest on the Affordable Care Act, some big companies saying, hey, we're dropping out of markets in the individual marketplace in some states, looking at the overall health of the program. Tom, you mentioned that public option in terms of, I think it was the Medicare context. Some people are saying the solution to this, these no competition areas where there's only one or two providers, is to return to that early idea that was proposed with the Affordable Care Act of some kind of public option, some kind of Medicare-like option for people who can't get onto or can't get affordable coverage from the current companies under the exchanges. Do you think that's a viable option?
It is certainly on the table and may well be, depending on the outcome of the election in November in terms of the makeup of Congress and who's sitting in the White House. This is a long-standing problem. We've had for decades in Medicare and more recently in the Children's Health Insurance Program a lot of private health plans that are an option. And when times are good and they're making money, they come in. And when they're not making money, they want to drop out. And so a lot of individuals and families are forced to switch to other plans and change the hospitals and doctors they can use and so forth. So it's really a bigger philosophical question of whether we want to rely so heavily on private health insurance in our healthcare system or whether a public option as a backup, similar to Medicare, but for folks under age 65, is a good idea, and then let them compete, let private insurers compete against the public option, which tends to run on much lower administrative expenses, doesn't need to pay off shareholders, and so forth.
Another solution I've seen floated is the idea that, well, Aetna, some of these big companies, they're old school, they're kind of dinosaurs, they're used to doing things in the old way. We'll have new, nimble companies coming up with fresh ways to provide affordable health care. Hopefully that will bring those younger people on board too. Is that happening, and are there ways that the healthcare laws could be tweaked to make it easier for new entries into the marketplace?
That's a very, very good question. It is so difficult because of the capital that is necessary to be raised to build health plans, to have enough risk margins, you know, to build up safety margins and reserves. And in fact, some of the smaller health plans that people thought would be successful competitors to these larger insurers have not done well under the Affordable Care Act and are struggling or even have shut down. So it would take a specific act of Congress, I think, and the president to really create some new startup funds and to support the development of these smaller health plans. On the other hand, again, here, history in Wisconsin itself, we have many, many small regional health plans that have organized and are successfully competing very, very well. So once you get them up and running, they tend to attract a lot of loyalty and do a very good job on especially the not-for-profit plans. But that is not something that's easy to do across the country as a whole.
As I understand it, at some point in Affordable Care Act negotiations in Congress, there was an idea of something called a risk corridor where the federal government would, in a way, guarantee these health care providers, hey, if you have this rocky start, you have these shortfalls, you're losing money for a while, we'll help you out. That got knocked out in the back and forth. Is that something that could be brought back that might help keep some of these companies or bring new companies into the market exchange?
That's a great point, Rob. It's actually still in the law. It's just that Congress has not provided the funds allowed under the Affordable Care Act to compensate the health plans that spent more because they enrolled sicker than expected patients. So it's really up to Congress to put the money in to help stabilize these pools. And when a health plan legitimately is spending more money going out the door than they're taking in because the patients are sicker than expected, that should be taken care of. But until Congress gets its fiscal house in order and appropriates those funds, we'll be stuck with that situation. And that is a problem for several of these plans.
We're talking about the Affordable Care Act and recent news that some insurance companies, most recently Aetna, are removing insurance plans from the public marketplace in some states. Tom Oliver is with us from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you make of this news? Are you getting coverage via the federal exchange? How has that worked for you? Do you have options? Do you have viable options for your bank account? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now about the state of the public health insurance exchanges, especially as companies like Aetna threaten to pull their plans off the marketplace in some states. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions for our guest, or your experiences getting coverage or not under the public exchange. How has the Affordable Care Act affected you and your coverage? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tom Oliver is with us from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And we'll go to our callers now. Jackie is with us in Madison. Jackie, hi.
Hi there. I'm very much I'm very happy that you're having this subject on because it's been something I've been wondering about for several months. This year, my daughter went on the exchanges. She's not covered by health care in by her her place of business, she's found that there are high deductibles on the most affordable plans. She decided to take up a silver, was able to afford that, but still, after doing that, I think her deductible is $1,500, which is almost impossible for her to reach. And so I was wondering what's in the cards regarding that as far as the federal government changing that, or maybe the insurance companies themselves changing that. The other thing is, even if she has gone to doctors and she's gotten prescriptions of things that were very helpful for her, enabling her to work, and found that the drugs were not covered, and the drugs were so expensive, she couldn't afford them anyway.
Jackie, thanks for the call. So 2 points there, worries over high deductibles, Tom, even in that silver level plan.
Yeah, you know, the thing in our healthcare system these days is coverage is not first dollar for virtually anybody. And Jackie, you make a great point about there still being a very significant deductible. That's a pretty common deductible across most employer-based plans as well these days. The only thing I can say is I'm glad, as your daughter has experienced, to not have to spend that $1,500 because you're lucky enough to be healthy. To not give money to the healthcare system is good for you, and even if it feels painful in terms of how much money you're putting in and not getting a lot out. The drugs are also an interesting question because some of the very, very high expensive ones do then translate into high deductibles that patients have to get. And so some who have very limited income or discretionary income after paying rent and food and other transportation needs are ending up splitting their pills or going without entirely. And that is a problem. And that's something that is going to have to be continue to be discussed. What is actually affordable? There are a lot of subsidies for lower and middle income individuals to buy this insurance, but they're still left with these very high deductibles, and especially in the plans that are cheaper than the one that Jackie's daughter purchased. So this is going to be a conversation that will never go away, honestly, whether it's the Affordable Care Act or our negotiations with employers.
Jackie, thanks for the call. Good luck to your daughter. We'll go to Sarah next in Holman. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been following this conversation with Aetna particularly closely because of an NPR article that referred to a Huffington Post investigation stating that Aetna had sent a memo to the Justice Department basically saying, if you don't approve our merger with Humana, we're going to pull out of the exchange plans. And I'd like your guests to comment
right,
on
Sarah.
How that impacted their decision in addition to the high cost of their very sick members.
Sarah, thanks for that call. And Tom, yeah, people have been making the case. This isn't just about the bottom line. This was, people have used the word extortion, saying that because this merger wasn't approved, that's why Aetna's pulling out. Do you have thoughts or observations on that?
Well, that is certainly a discussion that's out there. I don't have firsthand evidence one way or another, but it's very clear that two of the very largest healthcare companies in America wanted to get even larger as one. And that is on the table in terms of appearing to be financially not doing as well as you might be, so that the chances of having the merger approved have a greater chance of going through. So, Sarah, I think you're right that that is something that's certainly lurking behind the scenes, and whether this is mostly a bluff or politics or whether this is legitimate business practice of Aetna's part is, I think, in the mind of the beholder at this point.
Sarah, thanks for that call. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act and the latest on it with Tom Oliver from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Back to our callers with Jane on the line in Green Bay. Jane, hi.
Hi. I'm really glad, too, that you're having this topic on. My husband and I are both self-employed, so we don't have the option of having a corporation insure us. So we do rely on the exchange. And I have a couple comments. We had United Healthcare for a year, and their ability to process claims was utterly unbelievably bad. We had things like a simple blood draw, $3.95, and it would take 10 times back and forth to get them to include it as a standard procedure, as an example. And then the other thing I wanted, so it doesn't surprise me that they're not making any money, you know, when you have that level of increase in the cost to administer a plan, I don't know how they would make money. And then the other thing had to do with the subsidies, which is the general overall view of things. We are really happy with the level of subsidies, but the uncertainty is really hard.
Jane, thanks a lot for that call. So for her first question, Tom, I mean, we saw the trouble with the rollout from the government side. Is there a case to be made that some of these companies took on this big market and maybe bit off more than they could chew, and bureaucratic snafus were one of the results?
Well, I think change is when you're moving people from one level of coverage or one kind of plan into another. That is one of the problems with our fragmented health system, is that it's difficult to keep track of people. Our records, both administratively and the medical records, don't travel with us. And there's a lot of high overhead especially in the private health insurance world because of this. And then there's, of course, the intentional not paying and making, you know, putting the hassle factor on providers to get their payments or on beneficiaries to make sure that their bills are paid. So I think this is just one of those issues that is going to have to work its way out, and over time we'll end up with a more stable and reliable group of health plans in the exchanges. And then the final thing, Jane, you've got a really challenging situation because you don't have a larger employer contributing. It's good to hear that you feel the subsidies are fair. They're not supposed to be more than 9.5% of family household income, which is still a lot of money. But in the long run, I think what we're going to see is that individuals like that are going to, you know, have to, you know, keep pushing the government on this question of affordability, and then making sure that the health plans are responsive. But I think we'll see fewer and fewer health plans that are more and more reliable as we go on through time, or else there'll be a lot of pressure to create a public option so that the government itself is just paying directly to the providers and there's not a lot of claims processing.
Jane, thanks for that call. Tom, as we wrap up, what indicators are you watching for the well-being of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, let's put this in perspective. All of this is hullabaloo is over about 4% of state residents here in the state of Wisconsin and relatively similar percentages across the country. There's so many more people enrolled in the Medicare program, many, many times more enrolled in children's health insurance and Medicaid, and employer plans, you know, dwarf this. So this is, you know, something that needs to work in the long run because it is filling in where other programs aren't available. But it's not as though the entire Affordable Care Act is in trouble or unraveling. In fact, it has performed very well. Millions and millions more have gotten coverage under the Medicaid and children's health insurance in the last few years. And in the long run, I think we're going to have to keep, you know, struggling to make sure these programs are seamless and we get everybody taken care of one way or another. The one thing that people don't realize with the Affordable Care Act is that it massively expanded the Community Health Centers program.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Tom Oliver, Professor of Population Health Science at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health.